There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along this hour. Phone number, hey, same as it's ever been. Same as it ever was. 343-0106 for a call or a text. 343-0106. And with the FM Talk 106.5 app, you can send us one of those talkback messages as well. All right, let me talk about this for a second. This is a service to our state that is, I would say, important 6 days a week, 7 days a week, but he gives it to us 6 days a week. And it's important year-round. We talk about it a lot during the legislative session, but there's always things that are happening now that end up becoming part of bills that are pre-filed and filed during session and what goes on in Montgomery. It's why it's important to get that email in your inbox 6 days a week from my man Todd Stacey. He's with Alabama Daily News. Also, you know him, his visual presence. You see him on Capitol Journal. And I just appreciate what you do, and you and your crew, not just you, but everybody working with you there at Alabama Daily News, because it's stuff that if people study it now, they may say, we're not in session, Todd, but this stuff all plays out later.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's really kind of you to say. I really appreciate it. But look, there's a lot going on always in Alabama government and politics. And really, ever since the legislature went away, you know, adjourned back in May, a lot of our attention got turned to Congress because they really revved up their activity in terms of the big beautiful bill, the rescissions package, a lot of different things going on. They're getting into deep into appropriation season, and so it just so happened, you know, made a really good call to finally get a Washington, D.C. based reporter to be up there, to be, you know, in the halls of Congress, interviewing our members of Congress, our senators every day. And that has really been an investment that's paid off because, man, there's a lot of activity in Washington, including with Alabama's delegation.
Yeah, and it's important for me. I'm not going to speak for others. I don't know. I just speak for me. To get what's going on. They'll say, well, I see Senator Tuberville. He's on Fox News or so-and-so's on the... Yeah, but that's only when that national news outlet needs somebody that goes with the story they already are running, right? I mean, they're going to run
exactly
a story about
right.
whatever it is, and so we can get this person because they're on... But that leaves the other nine things that might be interesting to Alabamians that they could talk about off the talking points.
Yeah, and our delegation, they are very active. And, as an alum, as a staff alum of that delegation, I can tell you, I mean, you got a lot of smart folks that are sitting on the right committees and probably don't get enough attention just with everything going on. We only have so many stories we can run, only so many interviews we can do. But it's really, you know, our top story today was about Senator Britt and some of the clever ways that she's been dealing with some of these funding cuts. But yeah, that's a big deal. But the only reason we can get it is because Alex Angle, our D.C. reporter, sat down with Senator Britt just to, you know, for a good long interview. And this will be, I think this is the second of like three stories she's going to run about that. So I'm actually interested to see what the next one is.
Yeah, and so, I mean, the chances of Senator Britt being invited to talk about that on something somebody's watching on cable news at night are a lot smaller. Right. I mean, unless there was some other narrative going on nationally that they wanted to fill another voice with versus looking at it from an Alabama perspective. It's 100% important.
I agree with that. But, you know, basically what the story was, there are two kind of recent instances where cuts were headed to Alabama, meaning like someone in the administration, someone at a department had frozen funds. One was for education, right? Just these like kind of after school, summer reading, these kind of things had been frozen. But we were here about to start school and people are starting to freak out. Senator Brooke gets involved, gets them unfrozen. Same thing with money going toward cancer research at UAB in Birmingham. Again, this was not a White House directive. It was someone in the administration somewhere, and she intervened to get it unfrozen, to push back against that. So, again, these are very Alabama. I mean, they have other states are impacted by that, but they're very Alabama-centric stories that we've run over the last couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's important to talk to her about that. Why did you do this? How did you do this? And it's really interesting the way that she talks about these things because, you know, right now is obviously a time in Washington where no Republican wants to be seen as anything but 100% loyal to Donald Trump.
Correct. That's just
the reality. So she's been clever about it. She, in her letters and things to the administration, she says, this is, you know, cancer research. This absolutely is part of President Trump's agenda. This is what he ran on, you know? So it's like, it's not like she's going against the administration. No, this is what he wants. So I found that to be clever.
Yeah, I do too. I want people to kind of look at that, read those stories and see that just because that she wouldn't have that ability to make that commentary on whatever. And I said Fox, but some, you know, national news show, they would invite her in for that. So that's why y'all got to get the email. Also, oh my gosh. So this, I was on vacation. I was down in Puerto Rico. But of course, the Twitter, the X on my phone went to ding ding on Friday. And then people text me, hey, Sean, did you see this? I'm like, no, I think we're going snorkeling later. What's going on? SCOTUS. Louisiana case and another bite at the apple here. I just actually got done. I had Representative Matt Simpson in last hour, and he and I were talking about this too. Is Louisiana saying, as Louisiana case now telling Alabama that there's a chance to come back and run this again?
Yeah, and I always expected there would be. The Supreme Court.
That's what Matt said too. I guess I don't know why. I just kind of kicked rocks and said, well, that's dumb and it violates the VRA the way I understand it, but y'all had faith. That's good.
Well, I guess it was just kind of the way the court's last term ended. They kind of have two terms. I guess it's one term, but it's kind of with a break in the middle. And so they're about to get going again. And October is really when they start deciding on cases. They've already heard arguments in this case. But when the term ended, they did not rule, right? They basically said, we want to hear more. So it wasn't as if, like, they denied cert or something where it just shut down the case or sent it back to the states. They still are going to do something. And considering that they want to hear more, that could be a positive sign in terms of folks wanting clarity and wanting to, you know, kind of go back to a more traditional understanding of redistricting. Look, we need this. I don't care how you feel about redistricting. And I know this is a big nationwide issue. Lawmakers, state lawmakers need clarity of, you know, what are they supposed to do? Are they supposed to follow the Constitution or are they supposed to follow the Voting Rights Act? Because in many ways, those are
contrary.
In conflict.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And how, when this was asked before, that it didn't force the decision on, and I know there's, you know, idea who has standing, nuances and all that, but I mean, here I am, you know, just a regular guy. And I kept going, yeah, but you can't make a discrimination based on race. That's good and right. That's what we should treat everybody equally. But now you're telling us, well, we're going to make this decision based on race. Say what?
Right. I thought I wasn't supposed to do that. And so we need clarity. You know, redistricting is a political process. You're talking
100%.
About creating districts for political office. You can't remove politics from it. And it's just interesting. I don't expect Alabama to be that big a deal. Like, you know, if this happens and they get to redistrict, you're talking about one seat, right? You're talking about maybe that second congressional seat being a little more favorable to Republicans and therefore, you know, perhaps a one seat pickup. It's not in the 5, 6, 7 seat range you're talking about in Texas and in California and all these states. And so I'm really fascinated to see what happens there. And again,
remember, this has happened before. I don't remember when, but I was on the morning show today when we were talking about it. I said, this has happened. There has been exodus out of Texas before. This kind of stuff has been pulled.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's happened before. And again, that's what if you really want to get down to it, like, what they're doing is trying to right a wrong. The 2020 census was all kinds of screwed up. Just all kinds of screwed up. And states, especially Illinois, there were a couple other examples, but Illinois, with all these COVID policies, just went way overboard in terms of population estimates and things like that. And at the time, everybody thought, like, okay, well, they're just trying to get their numbers up and they were trying to avoid losing seats in Congress, right? So their census numbers were way inflated. But it didn't just help them avoid losing seats in Congress. It helped them, pad the Democratic majority at the time. And that's a story that didn't really get told a lot. And so you got the folks doing what they're doing in Texas. That's what they're trying to make up for, is the fact that some states gamed the census to pad their congressional roles. You watch, after 2030, after that next census, assuming there's not a global pandemic or other interruption, a lot of House seats are going to change hands. You'll see Texas pick up some. You'll see Florida pick up some. Alabama could even pick up one. But those other states, those blue states, really, are going to be losing them because they're losing population.
Well, you have the other side of the coin here. You got Gavin Newsom saying, well, Abbott's doing it in Texas, I'll do it in California. At least that stuff I understand, because I'm not a party operative for any of them, that I understand that's the game played between the two parties. I get that part, but don't then try to paint it into telling me that, that you're going to do it based on representation by the amount of melanin somebody has in their skin. It's about party politics, man. But then turn around and say, well, but the VRA says, but the Constitution says. I mean, I kind of felt like it spit in my face with that decision on the redistricting here.
Well, hopefully we'll have a resolution on it. And, this is a court that's obviously very conservative, but they're also very thoughtful. And I would imagine, I mean, look, they were not in a rush to come to Alabama's or Louisiana's side, when all this was being litigated and actually mattered for the 2024 election. So it's not as if the Supreme Court said, oh man, let's intervene and make sure that Republicans pick up seats. So it's not even though they're a conservative court, they're not activists politically, I don't think. But this is a question that needs answering, and it needs answering before that next census.
Well, we're talking about people getting elected with Todd Stacey. Let's go to the mother's milk of politics and talk about in the email, too, some fundraising numbers here. I'm going to start off with this one, though. Y'all listen to this. I'm going to read it verbatim from the email this morning. Todd's going to throw something at me. Tommy Tuberville, the U.S. senator running for governor, cracked the $5 million mark in his continued effort to ward off a primary opponent. The way I picture that, you got somebody just barely nipping at his heels, right? he's warding off a primary. It's done been warded off, man, to put it.
Oh, I agree. I agree. If anybody ever had a bright idea, I mean, yeah, but I will say this. Let's just say he wasn't raising money. Let's just say he just didn't care about that, was taking it for granted. Then you could be inviting somebody to mess around. And so, but they're just banking so much money. Everybody and their brother is getting in line to give to Tuberville, and I think we know why. But, no nipping at Tuberville's heels. But a lot of these other races are pretty competitive.
Absolutely. I want to talk about it. But that's why I went down a couple, because when I saw that this morning, I said, oh, yeah, that he's just barely warding off that competition with his new $5 billion mark.
Okay. It's done been warded, I see.
All right, let's talk about those that are closer. Let's talk about some of these numbers. First of all, you're talking about Jay Mitchell, candidate for attorney general, raising more than $300,000.
Actually, and that we got more information after the email went out. That number is more like 400,000. So he's really banking it too. And we expected that. We expected Jay Mitchell in his campaign for attorney general to raise a lot of money. He had shown in his races for this race for the Supreme Court that he could fundraise, and so clearly can do that. What's interesting also about that race, I mean, Katherine Robertson is still raising a lot of money. She got another $100,000 from that group out of Nashville, the National Legal Group, and that's on top of the million they already gave.
So, I mean, in the AG's race, by the time we look at all money spent going into, I mean, we're looking at multiple millions of dollars in fundraising for an AG's race. Is that seem fair to say? More than a million, so. 2 million, 3 million for an AG's race is wild.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, you'll see these candidates raise anywhere between, you know, $2 and $3 million, and
wow.
Well, they're already halfway there, but and that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot historically speaking. But you know, you've got one candidate in Birmingham and Jay Mitchell that knows how to raise money, and then clearly Catherine Robertson has some strong ties with these judicial groups that are more active at the federal level, and so that's get ready, because the airwaves, your airwaves and other airwaves are going to be packed with advertising. I'm just kind of wondering when it starts, because you know
we're open to it now. If they want to start now, I'll go ahead and start taking I'll start taking their money right now.
I got some web ads. Yeah, I got some web ads.
Yeah, we'll send a little one sheeter to y'all. We're ready to go. And you know, the Catherine Robertson part too, you and I had talked about maybe last week or a couple of weeks ago, maybe traveling with Marshall helped those introductions to those groups, you know.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, and you know, Marshall was the chairman of the Republican Attorneys General Association, very active group. And so obviously as his chief counsel, that means she's involved heavily with that group. And we've all known that over the years. They've been very active nationally and sharing ideas and things. Every time there's an issue that comes up in Texas or any other Republican state, you know, they are involved. So I'm not surprised about that. But it is, I mean, it's eye-popping to see. It's a group called First Principles, a nonprofit run out of Nashville. They're active. Like when there's like a Supreme Court confirmation, this is a group that would get active and run ads and things like that in support of a Trump nominee or maybe opposing a Biden nominee. So it's interesting to see them now getting involved in AG races, mm-hmm. at least in Alabama, probably other states as well.
Yeah, it did get my – those numbers got my attention. Also, here for the lieutenant governor's race, Wes Allen, you said led July fundraising in the GOP field. How much did he bring in?
That's right. Not quite as much as the AG race, but Wes Allen raised $139,000 last month. These reports are monthly, so that means that he's got about $100,000 cash on hand. $390,000 cash on hand. Sorry, and that's a lot. That's a lot, mm-hmm. but nothing compared to
AG. Yeah. Whoever's nipping at his heels.
And Rick Pate, very similar, raised $100,536. He's got $350,000 cash on hand. So they, you know, they're about $50,000, you know, difference between them. So this is a competitive race. It was interesting because Steve Flowers wrote a column about it today, and he said it's going to be less about money and more about, you know, getting around the state. They're going to have, at the end of the day, probably the same amount of cash.
Okay.
So it's getting around the state, you know, glad handing, getting to know people. But I expect that race to be very close.
And then, you know, as Wes Allen would leave Secretary of State's office open, that's going to be two that you talk about here, running for it, Caroline Dobson and Andrew Sherrill. Let's talk about that.
Right. Dobson, we know, is a good fundraiser. Also has been able to loan her campaign funds, considerable personal funds, family funds. So that always helps. So she's ending the month with $600,000 cash on hand. That's part of, you know, part of that's a $500,000 loan to her campaign. So who needs the fundraising when you can loan it to yourself? Andrew Sorrell, he's got $309,000 cash on hand at the end of July. So she's got an advantage there. That's a significant, you know, $300,000 advantage. So he's got some catching up to do. The interesting thing was that he had to give money back. He was part of this Ponzi scheme, or he got contributions from this group that was tied to a Ponzi scheme, and because of that, he decided, you know, it'd be the best thing to do to give it back. So that doesn't help when you've got to give money back. But look, I think this is a competitive race. But if she continues to, you know, out fundraise him 2-1, then it might not be close when all the ads start.
Yeah, and dang it, we ran out of time. But, like, for next week or something, I do want to – I need to find out about that Ponzi scheme. I don't know how it worked, but we'll have to give a primer on that.
Yeah.
But they're waving me off because it's the bottom of the hour, and I got to go to the news. People want to get the email in their inbox each day. How do they do it?
ALDailyNews.com. That's the homepage. And, yes, Capital Journal, Fridays at 7:30, Sundays at noon.
Good stuff, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, be good.
All right.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
After that, do a follow-up with Todd next week on that. I do want to learn more about that Ponzi scheme that ends up donating to political campaigns. Yeah, I'm intrigued. Hey, speaking of politics, too, got this note here. The Fairhope City Council candidate meet and greet is coming up on the 19th. That is 19th from 6 to 8. At Wet Salt, 872 Fairhope Avenue. So that's on there. Thank you for sending that in. And also, a heads up, a week from Thursday. So that is the, so this is going to be the Mobile Chambers Business Expo is going on that day, that Thursday. But we're going to be there, like usual. Usually I'm there just doing the show, hanging out with y'all. But we're having the four Mobile mayoral candidates on board. They're live and in the flesh. So from noon to 2 during that event. So you can, in other words, not only can you listen to it on the radio and our streaming and all that, but you can show up in person and check it out as it goes on right there on the floor of the convention center. So noon to 2, the events throughout the day, but noon to 2, we'll be doing that debate with the mayoral candidates and still soliciting y'all's questions. All you have to do is send me an email, not a text, an email, Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. Put Mobile mayoral debate or anything Mobile mayoral in it in the title line so I can find it, and then give me your question. Make it short, man, but put the question in there so we can use it a week from Thursday. All right, more on that when we get back. News coming up, well, right now.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
What did Cam just tell me I was allowed to have up in my office? It fits the culture of the station. Interesting. Our decorations are something around here. That's for sure. All right. Check in with my buddy, Blaine Price. He's at Parrish Tractor in Robertsdale. And, you know, we talk about big equipment and Kubota a lot, but your handheld and your steel equipment is like, I don't know what percentage of your square footage inside, which is big, it's taken over, but it's a whole bunch.
It is, Sean. We've got plenty of steel products. We got walls full of them, all out in the showroom. A little bit of everything in steel, not just chainsaws, but hedge trimmers, weed eaters, pressure washers. We got them all in gas and electric models. We can form it into a package if you're looking to buy a zero turn and you're eyeing out some of the steel stuff. We can form it into a package for you as well. Plenty in stock. Come see us if you're in the market for any type of handhelds, but the steel ones really are flying off the shelves.
For a second, we had this conversation when I was out with y'all earlier in the year, and I do have some electric stuff. I've been slowly, and I've been impressed by stuff. You're a guy that works around it. Where do you see, like, for homeowners, not electric, do you have, is it 10% of the market? Is it 30? Is it 70? I mean, what are you seeing in the store? Who's homeowners buying what?
We're getting close to that 50% mark. If we're not already there, we're getting close to the 50% mark. I would say we sell just as many. If not, we're real close to it, but just as many electric. We sold two electric push mowers yesterday, steel push mowers, just yesterday morning that I saw. And just people are really, really liking the electric, especially if they already have a steel blower or a steel weed eater that's electric. That takes a certain battery, they'll come back and buy that push mower, that hedge trimmer, or even the chainsaws. The chainsaws are pretty good too. I will say I'm not the electric guy, but I do have an electric one because when I go climb up into a tree, I've got a handheld chainsaw.
Mm-hmm.
It's real quiet.
and it's always running, you know, I mean, it's ready to go. You charge up battery and, I've 10 years ago, my buddy Danny Lipford gave me one from another manufacturer. And I was like, hey, it's pretty neat. I said, that's cool for trimming stuff around the yard. And then a decade later, I'm out at your place seeing them run. I'm like, well, okay, that's different. That's a lot. I mean, it's just got a lot bigger and stronger.
It is. I've got one in my blind bag that I take hunting just to be quiet, and but it still gets the job done. So
you check those out. So almost 50-50. That's cool. And then on quickly before we wrap up, too, the rental side. I know y'all are always we're talking about the rentals and people with the weekend coming up. Got a plan. You've got something for them to rent to do that job.
Got a little bit of everything, Sean, right now. Got a lot that came back off this weekend's rent. A lot of tractors, skid steers, mini excavators, but all the way down to handheld tools, power saws. We've got pressure washers, generators, concrete equipment, dump trailers, scissor lifts. You know, if you're looking for anything to do around the house or, you know, running up to the hunting camp, because we're almost getting to that time of the year, we've got it in our rental fleet. If it's something that you just cannot justify purchasing, it's going to be a once or twice use out of it, come rent it from us, because I guarantee we got it.
All right. Tell folks how to find you.
We're right here at Parrish Tractor in the middle of Robertsdale on Highway 59. Come by, see us Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Saturdays, 8 till noon. You can call us at 251-947-4171 and visit us online at parrishtractor.com.
Hey, thank you, Blaine.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, there goes Blaine at Parrish Tractor. That's 50-50. You always wonder kind of when it gets to that point. Like what's the adoption rate or whatever? And like I said, way back, Danny gave me that one. It's like a Ryobi or something to use. It was cool, but I was like, yeah, okay. I'm not going to use it during a hurricane or trying to, you know, limb roads or anything. Yeah, but around the house, it's good. And then really didn't mess with them for like a decade and then saw what they had available. And I said, okay, these have some big chainsaws. And they run. They've got the torque. I was impressed. All right, let's get some text. I know I've been delinquent here on the text line, so let's get to it. Let's get undelinquent. Or linquent, however we do that. Let's see the first one here. C.B. Carl said, I sat on a grand jury, heard the Scott Ward case along with Brittany Wood's case. How he did it daily is beyond me. I'm with you, C.B. Carl. I don't like, and what, looking at Matt Simpson there, you know, he's a legislator, but he's also a prosecutor by trade that does those kind of case. How you do that, like, and then have to go home and B-Dark said, Sean, I've always said, hang them high at town square. Yeah, well, but the law doesn't allow for that. That's what we got to, you know, you can say, I get your spirit about that, B-Dark, but I also believe in the rule of law. This texture, I may have got missed your name lately. We'll just get you all unnamed texture right now. Many times in cases of murder, the appeals go on 30 years because they need to be sure they got the right person. In these child cases, it's pretty apparent who did it. Yes, and I am. That's why I said we want to make sure that people have their day in court. This is what our republic was set up on. Just the other stuff that how I am about Second Amendment, I'm also about these rights. I like the whole thing. You adopt it, you know, it's the Constitution. It's not like, it's only this part of the Constitution that, no, it's all the Constitution. So you afford these rights to people, but once they exhaust their appeals and all that, then, yeah, we don't need to have people sit there for 30 years. And maybe in some of these cases, listen, and that's another thing that has me slow to be the biggest advocate for death penalty, is here in the court, the cases where people were wrongly accused, and finally, DNA evidence came out and exonerated people with stuff. That, to me, is very important to make sure you have the right person. So, but in some of these cases where, like you said, in these child cases, then, yeah, it's not the, hey, we're going to go get a posse and get anybody who's accused of this and go hang them in the town square. Deference to B-Dark. It is... Is it unusual as a punishment to have this become a capital offense? I guess that's the question being asked here. Unnamed texter said, if there really is such a glaring difference between Republicans and Democrats, why is it taking so long for something like Doge to happen? Seems like both wings belong to the same bird and they want more power for their own reason. And neither party cares about the people, just the lobbyists that help them get elected. You know, I've said, and texture, I appreciate it, text, I've said this before for shock value, but also it's true. I don't have a problem with lobbyists. I get what they're doing. Like, what they're doing makes sense. Somebody's paying them to try to get laws changed, added to anything for that benefit of that group, whatever that group being. So I have no problem with them. My problem is with the elected official that listens to them. You know, they'll say, we need to get the lobbyist out of, you know, out of the halls of government. Well, maybe we hadn't had the halls of government not listen to the lobbyist. You know, the lobbyist, I know who they are. They wear their, they wear their feathers on the outside, right? So they get. We just need to have people elected to go, all right, yeah, I hear you. You're a lobbyist for whatever group, okay. Y'all want us to do this and that? Okay. And sometimes you may agree with them, sometimes you don't. Brad says, do you know where to find a sample ballot for the 26th election? So the you're talking about the municipal elections coming up on the 26th. You know, usually I'd send you the Secretary of State's office and website. I don't think it is. I'd have to go check. I think you probably have a better chance of finding that at the Board of Registrars for your county. So Mobile or Baldwin County, or if you're listening to us in Washington County, you know, all over the state, we have municipal elections going on in this cycle. So that might be the best. I'll tell you what, we will dig for that. Brad, that's a fair question. We'll dig for that and see if we can get that posted up beforehand. I just have not seen it out there yet. But yeah, usually it'd be under the auspices of the Secretary of State's office. But I wonder, because it's specifically municipal, maybe it doesn't. Maybe. All right. Houndstooth in Mobile, do they have handheld grass edging tools? They do. I saw them. They got handheld. They get all that. Yeah, they got handheld. They like took over the shop there, which is cool because I like steel stuff. I like Husqvarna too. I like both of them. But they, like I remember what happened. Blaine was like, "Well, they've taken over this whole quadrant of the showroom here, and it's all handheld. So it's pretty cool." Let's see. This is Don says, "Good afternoon, Sean. Loving this cooler weather, aren't you?" You know, Don, I would, like I said, I was in Puerto Rico. It's actually cooler in Puerto Rico than it was at home. Yeah, you know, because I'm a nerd. I'm looking at my weather app. I'm like, yeah, it's a little cooler in Puerto Rico than Mobile. It says, bow season's right around the corner. You got that right. My thoughts on the mayoral race. Chief Prine is running on the best platform, in my opinion. He's basing his candidacy on being called by God to serve once again for his community. Y'all have a blessed day. Which is, you know, I talked about a lot during the morning show today about last night's mayoral debate put on by WKRG, moderated by Peter Albrecht. I thought it was good to have the four of them there. Here's one of the rubs, though. He was like, well, the question, they only had 30 seconds, this and that. You can either have one or two things. You can either have like four questions and they get to go on 5 minutes on them. Or if you want to have more questions, you got to shorten the time of the answers. I got to figure out what we're going to do with ours coming up a week from Thursday. Maybe you can help me on the text line. What do you think? Fewer questions, longer answers, or more questions, shorter answers?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 151 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here. Segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Jeff Stone at Stone Arms. We talked about this process, expedited process for getting your silencer using the kiosk there at Stone Arms. Talked about that for, you know, for me, it was something I was going to do, never got it done the old-fashioned way until Jeff said, hey, come in the shop. I got a kiosk here. You can get it done. Just show up here. We'll do everything here. And it's exactly what happened. You walk in, and it's just a deal where you put your information on the screen. But then, you know, it used to be you had to, like, fill out the forms and then go get your fingerprints taken over there and the passport-type photo taken over there. And so you have to put all the stuff together and mail it off and all that. Where with the kiosk, it's all in one place and it sends it off. And it took me about 20 minutes to get the information put in. And 2 weeks later, what I never thought would happened. I got my green light back from the feds to get my tax stamp and buy that silencer I've been wanting. And I also wanted to point this out because a lot of people think about a suppressor, you know, to put on their modern sporting rifles, right? That's a thing I may or may not do. But also I'm very interested in the gunsmithing there at Stone Arms because deer hunting rifles, I'm going to use the same. I'm going to use that same suppressor on a deer hunting rifle, so I don't blow my eardrums out any worse than they already are. They can do that work for you as well. So you can get the tag stamp, get that suppressor, then have them put it on your old 270 or whatever. They can do that right there at Stone Arms. Easy to find online, stonearmsinc.com. But, yeah, if you're going to do the kiosk and do everything to get your suppressor or check out the inventory there, go see them in person. They're about a quarter mile west of Snow on Airport Boulevard on the south side. And like I said, stonearmsinc.com online. Check them out today. All right, to the text line. Let's see, this is Jerry, Fort Morgan. Said, help me understand how the rule of law changed from when the Constitution and the laws were written and what's going to change in the future. Which part? How the rule of law changed from when the Constitution and laws... Well, the Constitution... We have a system. I mean, the founders, I sound like such a nerd here, but I am. The founders were genius in the fact that they realized that they were fallible, right? But they did the best dang thing they could put together with that Constitution. But they left a system. They left a system for making, you know, if somebody wanted to petition. I mean, there are things, big things we have changed over time out there. So I guess if you're going back to the conversation I had with Matt Simpson about how the fact that you have the capital, okay, you have capital punishment, wasn't, it was what Supreme Court denied the last bite at this apple of making child rapists, let's just say it, Jesus, making that a capital offense. The Supreme Court came back and they didn't say, no, they said, it violated it, not the cruel part, I think. They said, you know, it violates cruel and unusual punishment. I think they were talking about the unusual part, meaning there weren't enough states already doing that for it to be usual. So the idea and the push here is to get enough states to put this on the books, that this is the punishment for child rape, that it becomes usual. Then you could flip the votes, because I'm sure... If you were a Supreme Court justice and you were really locked down to the Constitution, you could say, hey, you've not, I agree with the spirit of what you're doing, but the Constitution doesn't give me a chance to change this, right? But if you come back and tell me now it's not unusual, that it's usual, there are more states that have this, and I don't, like, that's why I kept asking the question. I don't know if that means it's 10 states or it's got to be 26, you know, a majority. I don't know that. But at that point that it becomes usual, maybe they come back with a different decision. Maybe the 5-4 decision before against it was because they said, well, it says it's got, you know, unusual, and this is unusual because I think at that point maybe one state or two states had it. So, all right. My question here on the mayoral debate thing I have coming up, we have coming up a week from Thursday. Do we do, I mean, because you can't, we have more time. I mean, WKRG did a great thing. They took an hour. We're going to take 2 hours to do this. But I've done enough of these. I've moderated over time. You'll have a stack of paper with questions, and you'll realize, like, I've got, you know, 8 minutes left, and I have 4 pages of questions I didn't get to. That is, and this is the question. I mean, do you do longer form? But you could hit. You're going to hit fewer subjects. Or do you do, hey, y'all only have 30 seconds to answer, and we get more of the subjects brought ahead? Now, this texture said, allow them only yes or no answers. Okay, like it. Don says, shorter questions, longer answers, and if another candidate is mentioned, a rebuttal from that candidate of 15 seconds. So, and by the way, I see people, you're texting in, please send emails to me with your questions for the mayoral debate. It gets lost in the text line. Sean, my first name, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com. Just put in Mobile mayoral questions, something to that effect, in the email, and then give me, and I can redact your last name. I'm cool if you want to just be, but I'll use your first name and be a resident of Mobile. And give me a specific question. Keep it, you know, a couple sentences here. And we'll get those in the mix. And as many of them as I can ask. Or if we all decide as a group, we're going to ask 4 questions, but we're going to give each candidate 15 minutes. I don't know if, yeah, I don't want to, maybe not 15 minutes. We won't do that. Let's see, Michael. Attorney General Ken Paxton will seek judicial orders declaring that the runaway Democrats who abandoned their legislative duties vacated their office. You know, this stuff happened before in Texas. If somebody can, it's happened in other states too. My issue with that, and just like Gavin Newsom in California says, well, if Texas is doing this for the Republicans, I'll do it for the Democrats. That's all the parties. That's about Democrats and Republicans, right? My question about the redistricting in Alabama is about making decisions based on race. The parties are going to fight it. The parties are trying to win the most number of seats they can. That's what they do. But to me, the thing that's interesting to me and most important to me is for all Americans, right? And we're not deciding things based on people's skin color. So we'll do this again tomorrow. Another edition of Midday Mobile starts at noon on a Wednesday. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.